This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustees Seminar held on August 4, 2026 in Goshen, Indiana.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to see the amount of people that we have here, and when Richie was talking, I kind of got scared when he talked about how we use our resources, and I shouldn't say scared, I was uncomfortable, because I know there's a lot of things that we take for granted. We take so much for granted that we just don't think about. We go through life not thinking about it. I'd like to start out with some words from 1 Peter or 2 Peter about when we talk about the trouble and hurting among us. It's an area where we're not sure what to do with a lot of times. And how do we connect those people to something that gives them hope and gives them something to live for? In 2 Peter verse 2, it says, "Grace and peace be multiplied unto you through the knowledge of God and of Jesus Christ our Lord, according as his divine power has given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him who has called us to glory and virtue, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." Then it goes on to talk about that we've been given this divine nature through the knowledge of him, and that's the thing I want to expound on, the hope that we can give people. I know of no greater privilege than being called a child of God. When we think of what Richie was talking about, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, we can be his children. We can be his children. And I like the analogy he shared with the 8-year-old helping his dad fix the mower. And that's really what we are. And He gives us this divine power where he says that whereby we are given this divine nature, because of this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and temperance patience, and patience godliness, and godliness brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness charity. For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that you shall neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. But we forget these things. And here's what he says: "But he that lacks these things is blind and cannot see afar off, and has forgotten that he was purged from his old sins." That's the world we want to live in this forgiven world where we can be the children of God and live in innocence again. And this is what it takes to do that. So we have the trouble and hurting among us. And when I was studying for or looking into this topic again, I started thinking, see, I work at I've been in the mental health field for quite a number of years, and I tend to see the seamy side of our Anabaptist culture, especially the Old Order Amish and the Old Order Mennonites. And It's hard to watch. I don't know if we realize it, but our society as a whole is in a mental health crisis. There's simply not enough places to go to. The fear and anxiety that is ruled by the world. You see, fear sells. We hear it in the news. If you watch the news at all or hear about the news, it's all bad news. And it generates a lot of fear and what's going to happen next. And fear and anxiety is at an all-time high. But in our circles, in our culture, we're running right parallel with general society in that area. And I have some bad news. I kind of dreaded this topic because we like to talk about good things, and I want to talk about good things. But first, the bad news. We're in trouble. We have the mental health crisis that we have. In 2024, the late Marvin Wengert, if you listen to the messages on the hotline, he mentioned that in the last 30 some years, we have built over 50 brick and mortar facilities to help with the mental health crisis. And with the current rate it's going, it's not sustainable. We can't do it. Build enough, because every time where I work at, there's a waiting list. How soon can we get in? We need it right now, and we have a problem. We hear the cries of desperation, and can you just stop with me and grieve for some of the things that are happening in our culture, where a father rapes his daughter, or his brother, their brothers rapes a daughter, and just recently there was a this is hard to hear, but this is what is happening to us. A young mother can't go on because she's overwhelmed. Her husband's never home. She has a row of children. Recently, there was a gathering of, I call them broken ladies, that came together, that their husbands left them. And this is from various communities. But the number, to me, was staggering. There was 45 ladies there that their husbands weren't living with them anymore or were gone. Didn't know where they were. And that is just a sampling of the people that are actually going through this. So I once heard a speaker say this, and I believe it to be true. He said the number one problem in society today and in churches today is men. The number one problem. And the number one solution is men. We need to take our responsibilities seriously to protect the ones we are given charge to. So what is going wrong? What is happening? And we can blame it on all kinds of factors. Our fast-paced lifestyle, our wealth, our money issues, we heard about that, relational stress, marriage problems, and all kinds of things that we can blame it on. Oh, we have too much technology, we have this, we have that. But the common thread is we've kind of lost our way in the preaching and living out the gospel in our community, in a community setting. We fail to follow the mandate of protecting the weak and the vulnerable because we're busy. We've gotten away from doing what our responsibility really is. We want to serve God. We we're diligent. Like when I was looking through this, I ended up in Isaiah 58. And I got stuck there because there's so many relevant things in that book, the passage in the chapter of Isaiah 58. He says this: "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. They seek me daily and delight to know my ways." Does that sound like us? We love going to church. We love going to Fremdigmena. We love going to different functions, and they delight in, "Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God, and they ask of me the ordinance of justice. They take delight in approaching God." And they ask, "Why have we fasted and you don't hear it?" And I've come to the conclusion that this is the problem. It happened clear back in the very first two people that were born, Cain and Abel. Cain brought a sacrifice that was acceptable to the Lord. And Abel brought a sacrifice acceptable to the Lord, and Cain brought a sacrifice that he wanted to give. And that's our problem, I think. We want to serve God, but we want to do it our way and on our terms. And that's exactly what Isaiah 58 is talking about when we love our lifestyle and we like the way our community is. I like that too. I'm not when I say all this, I don't want to point accusing fingers, but this is the condition we're in. We start to love the giver, the gift, more than the giver. So we Anabaptists are plain people, do a lot of things well. We have hospital aid plans that is second to none. People want to be a part of our liability or fire aid and mutual aid, and we help each other. When there's disaster or a funeral, or people are there, I love that. It's a part of our community that is so, we're so blessed with that. And we like when people from the outside notice that and they talk about it, how well we help each other, don't we? We like to hang our hat on the fact that we live in a community where help is never far away when there's a disaster, except when there's people that are struggling mentally. When people are struck, we kind of back away from getting involved because we just take them out to Rest Haven or Woodside Rest or Green Pastures or somewhere like that, to one of these 51 places that we have, or more. I'm sure there's more than that, and we need all those places. I'm not throwing that away at all. It's something that is an arm of the church and something that is very needful. But how much of this could we take responsibility for? The church is the best place where we can get our help and our hope and encouragement. And I've noticed already, it's much safer to be physically sick or to have some other ailment than it is to admit that I have a problem I can't deal with. It's much safer. If you ever noticed in any given ad magazine, there's a section this big with health and wellness for chronic fatigue or lack of energy or brain fog or things like that we can treat, we can do something with, or at least they promise all these things that might help. But We like systems. We have the free will system a lot. And we like to fix what's not working. But we back away. I notice this even in myself. I don't. Marlon was talking about the guy on the street. That how do we help these people? We back away from the hard work of soul care because we're uncomfortable with situations that just defy any good solutions. Like these ladies I was talking about, how do you walk with them in a good way? We don't like being without answers. We don't like being vulnerable. We don't like to get involved in messy relationships. But that is exactly what the church is called to do. And maybe God isn't as interested in finding a solution for all this as he is in us working together and finding out we're all pretty much kind of in the same boat. So all this to say, what we have is so good, but we're missing something. We're missing something. It's like Jesus told a rich young ruler. We tend to give each other attaboys about some of the things, some of the fundraisers we have and all the money that's generated, and that's a wonderful thing. But Jesus told a rich young ruler, he said, "One thing thou lackest." So that kind of brings me to realize that we've got work to do. And I'm including myself right with you. When Jeremiah in Lamentations says this, in verse 3, chapter 40, "Let us search out and try our ways and turn again to the Lord." What does it take to get back on track and really figure out where are we going with all this? And in Israel, in their state of distress, when they fell away, and Ezekiel talked to them about this, "How then shall we live?" Well, we go back to Isaiah 58, and where he talks about fasting, and he says, "Loose the bands of wickedness, undo the heavy burdens, let the oppressed go free, break every yoke, share, help, protect, spend time with your family." He says in the King James Version, he says, "Hide not thyself from thine own flesh." What happens when we neglect our family and go do our things? That's essentially what Isaiah goes back to, is when he talks about, is this a fast I have chosen, that a man should bow down his head like a bulrush and all these things that he have sit in sack and ash cloths, sit in ash and sackcloth? Is this what I'm after? He said, "This is what I'm after. Is not this the fast that I have chosen? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out, when thou seest the naked, that they cover him, and hide not thyself from his own flesh?" And he says, "Then your light will break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily, and the righteousness shall go before thee, and the glory of the Lord shall be thy rear guard." See the promise when we turn to the Lord and we don't know what to do, but he does. And that's where we get our answers. And Then he says, if thou put away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger and speaking vanity, if you draw out thy soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then thy light shall rise in obscurity, and thy darkness as the noonday. So that's where we have to concentrate on. And granted, it gets pretty intimidating when you visit with somebody that, how you doing? Oh, I'm fine. And you know he's not. But how do you relate? Recently, I was in a young man came and he was brought some things that I needed, and I said, "Hey, how you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm great. I'm doing okay." And he started talking, and after a while, I said, "Jimmy," not his real name. You won't follow where I'm going with this, but I said, "Jimmy, how you really doing?" And he broke down and cried. And he said, "My life is a mess." And he said, "I don't know what to do." And I sat with him for a while. And it was hard to hear. But he came back later, he said. And he refers to that many a times when we're together, he says. That was just, I just think back of when I sat there on the pail and I just spilled my guts to you. Now that's something I happen to do right. We don't always get it done right. I remember times when I missed it, just like Marlon said. But that we put ourselves out there and make ourselves vulnerable. So there's no really 10 easy steps on how to be mentally, for better mental health, or how to help people who are struggling. But there are some practical ways to connect and to encourage others. And that's just this morning, this afternoon when we were talking, I was talking to Richie, and he asked some really good questions and made me talk. And I realized that is a gift that you have to practice to find out information, and that's what draws people. So one of the first things that I think is really important for the church, and that's for leadership, I see a lot of deacons here and ministers, is to make the church a safe place. Nothing will happen if it's not safe. Nothing will happen if they hear that so-and-so was with the ministers and I wonder what's going on. It means protecting personal information and strict confidentiality. I mean, especially those in leadership. And it also means withholding judgment or a quick response. Oh, you need to do this and that. And once we realize, when we go back to that, when we talk to these people, we realize we're pretty much in the same boat. We have our issues. We're pretty broken. And we realize and accept that we have nothing else over them as far as personal value. We've heard that this afternoon already. When we handle weakness with tenderness, others feel safe. We can be who we are and tell our story without leaving any chapters out. How many of us do that when it really, it makes us extremely vulnerable? And here's a quote from Larry Crabb's book, The Safest Place on Earth, which should be the church. Everything in the spiritual community is reversed from the world's order. It is our weakness, not our competence, that moves others. Our sorrows, not our blessings, that break down barriers of fear and shame that keep us apart. Our admitted failures, not our paraded successes, that bind us together in hope. A spiritual community, a church full of broken people who turn their chairs toward each other because they know they cannot make it on their own. Isn't that us? These broken people journey together with their wounds and worries and washouts visible. And we are able to see beyond the brokenness to something alive and something good. Another basic fundamental requirement is learning how to listen. We think we know how to listen, but so many of us, I do this so much. Good listening is hard work. So many times we listen so we can think up an answer right away. Thinking how we will answer. Will Rogers once said, "Never miss a good chance to shut up." And that's what, when we listen, we need to remember that. Let's not miss a good chance to shut up and listen. As soon as we start thinking how we'll answer, we stop listening. Listening means we set aside our own agenda, ideas, and prejudices and enter into their world. Look at it from their perspective. And listen to understand. When we try to understand, so many times when we start listening and something that's outrageous is being said, and we stop listening because this is that's too far out. But understanding, it's from their perspective. It's looking at the world through their eyes. So we have to understand that before we can realize where they're at. Walk like one person said, that you walk in where they're at, then you can walk out together. It doesn't mean we're agreeing. It just means we understand where they're coming from. And it's like the words they use and how they explain it, it's like a window to their soul. And you see what this person is struggling with. And when we're listening to their stories, we think we have to give this profound answer or this right answer. And that's when we stop listening. Listening is hard work. It requires time, when they start telling their story, we're reminded of our own story, and we dive in with our own story, and we end up getting the attention on ourselves. Oh, that reminds me of how I once did it, and this is what happened to me. Well, it's not about you. You're listening to this story that is troubling them. And when we resist the urge to offer solutions or a quick fix, what would you do with that? Many times people aren't looking for answers. They just need someone to talk to. A friend of mine often says this: there's three questions that people are asking in various ways. The number one is, this is how he says it: are you there? Are you with me? Do you hear me? Are you listening? Do you choose me? That's how he says it. Do you accept me as I am? Those three questions. Are you there? Are you present? Do you hear me? Do you accept me? I guess I'm asking that question to you today. Are you there? Are you listening? Do you accept me? We all ask that question. part of what makes us reluctant to get involved. And I get that. You don't know what to say. Is the fear of not knowing what to say. We tend to think we have to say something profound or some magic formula, have an answer for them. And that's often not what they're looking for. And we, so many times, those of us who've lived long enough have been through several deaths in our family, or someone close died, where you sit in line where people come through and they give their condolences. And we've all heard things that make you go, oh, really? They mean well. I don't want to take that away. I don't want to take that, make fun of or take that away. But when we can resist the urge to do that, even our soothing presence, be with somebody, can be a huge comfort to people that are struggling. That I'm here. I won't abandon you. The tendency is often saying too much rather than not enough. I'll tell you my story about my struggle about 36 years ago, which set me on a path of working with mentally ill. And God has a way of doing things that we don't understand. But back in the late 80s, early 90s, I went through a mental breakdown. And I haven't talked to a lot of people about this. But lately I've discovered what a value it is for other people. Nothing ever goes to waste when you go through something like that. So our oldest was, I think, about 14, 15. And one fall, things just started looking very negative. I couldn't place my finger on it, what was going wrong, and I got anxious and I got depressed and everything. Pick up the Bible and everything I read condemned me. And I went to a dear friend of mine. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, I'm afraid I'm going crazy, and I can't I can't get out of this, and I don't know what. I hope somebody can help me. And he said this. He said, "Well, you don't have anything else but pray. Just pray." And that was like, I don't know, like offering a swimming lessons to a guy that was drowning. To me, it just made me so much more panicky. And finally, my wife, bless her heart, said, "We're going to the doctor." I didn't argue. I was afraid, and I relied on her for everything. I was scared, and she. We went to the doctor, and I told him, I think I lost my faith. I don't know what to do. I'm lost. And it's an awful thing when you start doubting, when you kneel down to pray and you think your prayers aren't going further than the ceiling. It's an awful thing when you wonder if there really is a God. That's the state I was in, and I was afraid I'd do something hurtful to myself. And the doctor said, "There's nothing wrong with your faith. This is what's happening." I wasn't sure I was going to believe him, but he gave me some medication. He said, "I want you to take this for three reasons." He said, "The number one reason is because I said so. And the other reason is because I said so. And the third reason is because I said so. Because you're going to look at these and you're going to say, what does this have to do with something spiritual? And he said, I want you to take these. And the relief, and my wife, she never wavered. She was always there. The relief of this mental distress that I was in was so great. And I thought I was, after a couple weeks, I'm out of the woods, but I wasn't. I remember one winter day, that the snow was blowing and everything was just looked so bleak. Is it? And I thought to myself, is this ever going to end? I went out to gather some wood out by the wood pile, and underneath the snow, I had to push the snow away, and I started getting wood out of there, and there was a bunch of green grass underneath. And that's all it took. I was at work one day. I was working, and this wheel was just turning, and I couldn't. I went over to a friend of mine that worked there too, and he said, I said, I can't make it anymore. I don't know what to do. He said, here's what he said, and this is the stuff that helps people like that get through the tough times. He said, oh yes, you can. He said, I was over in that little room over there, I was praying for you. That's the kind of commitment we need. He knew what he himself had gone through some of it. He knew what I needed, and he was there. And so those are the kind of things that you can help each other with. Get in there with them. Be with them. So when we walk with these people, like I was telling you about, it's an honor to walk with people at their most vulnerable times. And when we start caring for people that are at their wit's end, we find out we're not really that different. Nothing brings the satisfaction like that does. I think God had something in mind when he put the weak and the strong together. These people have so much to teach us about ourselves. Strong people, I notice that in myself when I feel up to it. Strong people have a hard time seeing God at work, because we can do it ourselves. We just need his help in some of these areas. And so the church needs this. The church needs these people. And here's some practical approaches and examples is to begin where you are with who you are. Don't wait for others to solve the problems in the community and the church. And I'm talking about getting involved with people to help them stay out of these places where they don't. I do believe if we go back to the biblical mandate of helping each other, walking with each other, and holding each other accountable in a scriptural way, and holding out hope for people who don't have hope, and help them be a follower of Jesus. When we look at Jesus' life and every interaction that he had with different people, every interaction that he had, every situation that he dealt with, is a case study of how God looks at us people. Is a case study of how we can see how Jesus related. He asked questions. He asked good questions. And if we can just offer genuine friendship and invite the people that are in the margins, that can't do things for themselves, to meals or family gatherings, or even volunteer at a care facility. This is something we need to pay attention to. Soul care is hard work, but the surprising benefits and outweigh the negative aspects. One of the greatest things is learning about yourself and finding out we're all cut from the same cloth. We're all pretty much the same. There's a short poem that I found a while back. I have wept in the night for the shortness of sight. To that somebody's need I was blind. But I never have yet one twinge of regret for being a little too kind. I'd like to close with the Isaiah 58. This is what happens when we turn towards each other and help each other with the gospel of Jesus Christ. I read that, if thou drawest thy soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity and thy darkness as the noonday. And the Lord shall guide thee continually and satisfy thy soul in drought. And thou shalt be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of paths to dwell in. I love that. When we can get back on track of really caring for each other. We do that in so many ways. We do that in so many ways that we care for each other, but this is an area where I think we could do a lot better. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing the pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight and holy to the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words. Then thou shalt delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Blessings to you all. Thank you for being here. One more thing. I came across a book that I think the church leaders should read when the hurting people come to church. It's a fairly new book by Shanti Feldhahn and James Sells. And it's a good resource guide and gives some practical instructions how to, where to start or how we can help each other. Thank you.